Trib Live Radio presents Panther Lair, hosted by Pitt insider Chris Peek of PantherLair.com. A full hour of Pitt football, basketball, and recruiting talk. Trib Total Media, see what's next. Now, here's your host, Chris Peek.
Welcome to the Panther Lair Show. Chris Peek, brevity, we'll stick with the Panther Lair Show. We've got a lot to get to today, continuing our team preview for the 2015 football team. Position by position we're going. This week we've got the offensive line. With the other positions we've kind of gone, you know, we'll talk past, present, and future. This one we're pretty much going to stick with the present just because it's a big group. You got five guys playing all the time, and I think there's a lot to talk about with this group. If this position group, if the offensive line is as good as it should be, as good as we think it'll be, as good as really it looks like it'll be, there's a chance for this whole offense and by extension this whole team to be really good, because this could be one of the best offensive lines Pitt's had. Starters, TJ Clemmings and Matt Rothman, but you return six guys with starting experience. Do the math on that, and almost all of them are underclassmen. All but one is an underclassman. So you've got all these guys entering this season with experience, and then they're all going to be coming back again next year. If you're not feeling positive or optimistic about this offensive line, I think you probably should, because they were pretty good last year. They're probably going to be even better this year. So we'll talk about that coming up in a little bit. And then we're going to bring in Brad Franklin from CavsCorner.com. He's the publisher of that site. That's the VirginiaRivals.com site. We're moving through. And Akron, of course. How could I forget the Akron loss? And it was that stretch. It was games 4, 5, and 6 of the 2014 season. Pitt lost 3 in a row after opening the season 3-0. And people talk so much about that season last year being, the defense was so bad and the offense was great. And if the defense could have, you know, the defense let them down and cost them all these wins and all this. Well, that was a 6-7 team. And three of those losses, those three right there, Iowa, Akron, and Virginia, were all on the offense. The offense was not good in any of those three games by any measure. And but the offense is what lost that game. Unlike, you know, now I'll admit that there were games that the defense lost. I mean, Duke, Georgia Tech, Carolina come to mind. Certainly the bowl game was not a good day for the defense. But we talk so much about how the offense was so great and the defense was lousy. Well, that Virginia game was part of a stretch where the offense let the team down. And people say, well, you know, James Conner also could have had a touchdown, but the refs took it away. Yeah, that one was a questionable call when they went to replay. I could have seen it go either way. I think if it had been called, it's the other. You got, you know, the Holtz touchdown was called a touchdown on the field, so it didn't get overturned. And the Conner non-touchdown was called a non-touchdown on the field, and it didn't get overturned. I think you split the difference there. Because if you want to tell me Conner should have been scored a touchdown, or should have been ruled a touchdown, then I'll probably tell you that Holtz, you know, you could go the other way, maybe shouldn't have been ruled a touchdown. The offense let the team down, though, in that stretch. Because Virginia has put together good defenses over the years. And that's one of the things we'll talk to Brad Franklin about when we bring him in later in this show. Can't do anything with their quarterbacks to save their life. They were almost in position to have one scholarship quarterback this season. Brad will tell us more about that. I don't see any hope on the horizon for Virginia. I think Mike London's done after this season. He's won like three ACC games in the last 3 years. Or maybe five ACC. Some ridiculously low number. Pitt's one of them. You know, go Panthers. Pitt's one of them last season. But Mike London, I think he's a dead man walking in terms of his job. That's a morbid phrase to use, but that's the way it goes. He's probably going to be able to go out on his own terms. You just wonder how soon that's going to be. That could be this year if Virginia Tech doesn't have the kind of year that they expect to have in Blacksburg. And then Mike London definitely coaching for his job. Got to think he's done after this season with anything short of, I don't know if he needs a Coastal Division championship, but he needs to come close to it and get the kind of win total that makes people feel like things are getting better, because he hasn't done that basically since his second year. So lots to get to as we move through this week's Panther Lair Show. But we're going to start ball, general Pitt sports and all of that. But sometimes we come across stories that sort of go outside those parameters. They're related to Pitt sports, but it's not a game story. It's not a recruiting update or update on somebody's injury or, you know, midweek story on how the running backs are going to improve as pass blockers or something. It's not that kind of thing. And one of those kind of came across my radar this week, and I did a little interview. We're going to have an article up on PantherLair.com about Isaac Bennett, Pitt running back, had his fourth year this past. A preacher man, you know? Yes, he was. He's a good kid, good teammate, hard worker. Nobody ever had a negative word to say about Isaac Bennett as a player or a person. I never had anything in my encounters with him or interactions with him that would have been negative in any way. Nobody ever talked to players or coaches, administrators, anybody around Pitt ever anything to negative or never had anything negative to say about him. But there's a backstory because he wasn't always that person. And this is what I found out this week. He grew up on the north side of Tulsa, not a great area. Kids to be stolen in the first place. And Isaac Bennett was mixed up in it, to a pretty serious level to hear him tell the story. And looking to get into it even further as he moved through his high school career. December of his senior year, he finally decided to kind of change things up, get on the right path, really had some moments with church and with God, and it turned things around for him. But even he admits that if he had stayed in Tulsa, if Todd Graham didn't come to Pitt and offer Isaac Bennett a scholarship and an opportunity to go, I don't know, whatever it is, 12, 13, 1400 miles, 800, whatever the distance is, look at ways to get back into it at a higher level and get even deeper into it. Coming to Pitt was the breakaway that he needed. It allowed him to stay on the right path. And that personality that we all got to know, it developed right in front of us at Pitt as he grew as a young man and as a person. And there's a story there. There's a story behind all of that, and it's an interesting one when you see where somebody came from to where they're going. And that got me thinking, I mean, there are lots of these stories out there about these players that we watch put on like a lot of people in that class who, you know, bailed when Todd Graham bailed. He stuck with it, even though there was always another quarterback ahead of him. He stuck with it and really persevered. Or going back a few years, Dan Mason suffered a knee dislocation that didn't sever but severely damaged one of the nerves in his leg that caused him to not be able to lift his foot, basically. And he had to wear a brace that kept his foot at a 90-degree angle. Or a Haiti, the trip to Haiti that the players, a lot of football players and a lot of Pitt student-athletes make every year. By these people, and we evaluate them almost exclusively for how they affect the team. What can they do on the field? That's all that matters. And to a large extent, that is all that ultimately matters. You know, you and I would have no idea who Isaac Bennett is, nor would we care if he didn't wear a Pitt uniform, if he didn't have a scholarship to Pitt, if he didn't carry the ball on Saturdays at Heinz Field. We only know of him because he did those things. We're only aware of his existence because of what he did on the field. That's the basis of our relationship, if you will, with Isaac Bennett. But it's nice every now and then to think a little. Some people say that empathy is maybe the weakest of human emotions. I disagree. And I think that your opinion on empathy is probably going to determine whether you think I'm touching on something relevant here or just wasting your time and you want to fast forward to breaking down the offensive line. But that's what it's about. Do you care about the experiences of another person? I mean, particularly if that person is more of a jersey number than an actual person for you. And I don't say that derisively, and I'm not lecturing to say that we shouldn't commodify. I make a living on that commodification. It would be hypocritical for me to be hypercritical of that. Now, Isaac Bennett played 43 games at Pitt. He started 15 and carried the ball 309 times and gained 1,447 yards and scored 14 touchdowns. He averaged less than 5 yards per carry, less than 400 yards per season. He had 3 100-yard performances in those 43 games he played. Now, outside of 2013, when he had 797 yards and 7 touchdowns, but was eclipsed by the emergence of James Conner, Isaac Bennett had a pretty unremarkable career at Pitt. And knowing his backstory doesn't change that. It doesn't make his career more remarkable. But Isaac Bennett, he's an interesting guy too. I mean, you know, getting back to the field, if we can go back to commodifying him a little bit as an athlete and a Pitt player and a Pitt performer, I guess. He could have done more in his career. He could have been better. He, like I said, for his career, he averaged less than 5 yards per carry. He never averaged less than 4 yards per carry though in a season. And he averaged more than 5 per carry in 2014, and 4.7 for his career. The thing with Isaac is there was just always someone else. In 2011, there was Ray Graham. In 2012, there was Ray Graham coming back. Story, too, that he wasn't just a player for depth. He was a guy, you know, in the process of being a player for depth, he was a guy who stuck out through some adversity. You know, and I give him credit for that. I give him credit for sticking around when Todd Graham left, and give him credit for sticking around through a brand new coaching staff coming in and then different running backs coaches and all the different things that you go through, strength coaches and everything. And it was funny talking to him. It was really a no-brainer for him, from his perspective, to stay at Pitt. And he's pretty unique in that regard. There were 21 guys at Panther.com about Isaac Bennett, where he comes from, what he's, just kind of where he comes from. He's from Tulsa, but where did he really come from? I think it's a pretty interesting story. I look forward to you getting a chance to read that. Now, after all that talk about not commodifying people, let's get back to commodification. Well, coming up next, we're going to break down the offensive line. Look at what Pitt has this season in the starting five and the experience they got coming back. It should be a pretty good group. That's coming up next on the Panther Lair Show here on Trib Live Radio.
Ask any baseball scout about the key. You can't miss coverage on the Bucs every day. We are confident of that. Catch our Triple Crown coverage in Trib Total Media's daily newspapers and online at pirates.triblive.com.
Welcome back to the Panther Lair Show here at Chris Peak, publisher of PantherLair.com. It's Panther-Lair.com is the website. Talked a lot in that last segment about some stuff we got coming up on Isaac Bennett and just kind of looking outside just the normal game stories and everything like that. But we'll get back into commodifying these people and these players, and we'll look at the last, so to speak, as we it's really, you know, it starts up front, and that's where this team could have a strength. And the first thing that stands out about this year's offensive line is you look at the guys that they're projected to start or even just the guys who are going to fill out the two deep, it's experience. I know they lost two starters, T.J. Clemmings and Matt Rothram. Obviously, those guys were very important players on the right side of the offensive line, but they returned six players with starting experience, or at least five with considerable starting experience. An asterisk there that he played a whole lot last year, and then Gabe Roberts started a game last year. That's six guys with a start on their resume. Really, five guys with considerable starting or playing experience, if you want to include Jones Smith in there. Roberts just had the one start as they kind of went back and forth after Artie Rowell got hurt last season. But really, I mean, you know, Biznawadi, 18 games of starting experience. Dorian Johnson, 16 games of experience of starting experience. And Artie Rowell, 15. That's a pretty considerable amount of experience. They've said a couple of times, different coaches have said, he could probably play anywhere on the offensive line. Now, he's built like an interior lineman. I don't know if they actually want to put him outside at tackle. But it sounds like they think he's one of their best five, and he's going to be out there no matter what. Artie Rowell, on the other hand, has 15 games of starting experience. He's a rock-solid redshirt senior. He's the kind of guy you can rely on to be a leader. But he's going to have to battle for his job. He lost it due to injury last year, and he might get wally-pipped by Alex Lou Gehrig Officer. That would be Rowell at center and Officer at right guard, but you've got the added element of Alex Buchscher, the redshirt freshman. The last staff was really excited to get him signed and on campus. They managed to hold off on playing him last year. He was on the two deep all season. He made all the trips. He wasn't one play away, because when they needed to replace the right tackle, or they would have gone with Adam Biznawadi, shifted him from left to right and put Jared Jones Smith out there at left tackle. So Buchscher would have been a couple of plays away at right tackle. This staff came in. They've got holes at right tackle and left. Jones Smith. Those six guys, your five best is coming out of that group. And whoever that sixth man is, that odd man out, whether it's Artie Rowell, whether it's Alex Buchscher, whether it's Dorian Johnson, whether it's Alex Officer, although Officer might be in a group right now with Biznawadi and Jones Smith as the three guys who are locked to start. I really think those three have a spot in the top five. And then your other two spots are going to go to some combination of Johnson, Rowell, and Buchscher. One of those guys is going to be on the bench, and that's a help. And this is all, and we'll just get this caveat out there real quick. This is all a testament to Paul Christ and Jim Huber's recruiting. I mean, you have to give credit where credit is due. Those guys could evaluate and recruit offensive linemen, and they build a hell of a group here. This is a stable of offensive linemen that's going to provide a great line for this year's team, and provided a really good line for last year's team. And it's the oldest and truest cliche in football that it all starts up front, but it truly does. I mean, Pitt's best season in recent memory, the number one element, at least on offense, in my mind and in my, memory and looking back at it, was the offensive line. Why was it so good? Why was the offensive line so good? Because they had talented players with experience. The starting offensive line in 2009 was Jason Pinkston at left tackle. He started in 2008. He started, the year earlier. Joe Thomas was the left guard. He had started at right tackle the year earlier. Rob Hauser was the sack, 15 sacks in 13 games and gained 4.9 yards per carry. There aren't great stats to sort of quantify or qualify offensive line performance. It can be tough to look at numbers. I mean, you can talk about individual performance play with the pancakes and things like that. But I think if you want to find two sort of easily accessible stats, if you don't want to go down the pro football focus route, although I just saw Mark Cabali in the halls here at, in the Clark stat that'll try and help you give an idea of how effective an offensive line was. It seems to me that sacks and yards per carry are probably the two most telling measures of offensive line play. It's not perfect because there's so many factors that go into it. And, you know, I mean, like last season, Chad Vojtěch being a running threat and running as much and running as well as he did obviously skewed the numbers in both regards, the sacks and the yards per carry. And having a great running back like James Conner skewed the numbers in sacks and yards per carry and played. And in 2009, they gave up 15 sacks in 13 games and averaged 4.9 yards per carry. And that was a pretty good offensive line. 2014, this past season, last year, 21 sacks allowed, the fewest since 2009, and 5.3 yards per carry, the highest average for a Pitt football team in more than 30 years. I tried to look this up one time, when the last time Pitt averaged more than 5 yards per carry as a team, and I got back about 30 years. I got into the early, no Pitt team in the last 30 years has averaged 5 yards per carry or more until last year, 2014, when they averaged 5.3 yards per carry. And you can see, you can look at the numbers between 2009 and 2014 and see the deterioration of the offensive line, among other things, certainly. 2010, 23 sacks and 4.6 yards per carry. 2011, 63 sacks and 3.5 yards per carry. Now, 63 sacks, we know there were a lot of factors that went in. It does reflect all of those sacks because sack yardage goes as lost rushing yardage for the team. But that offensive line struggled, as evidenced by 2012. 38 sacks, which is still a ton, even if it wasn't as many as the year before, but 3.5 yards per carry as a team. And then 2013, Tom Savage sacked 43 times, 3.6 yards per carry as a team. Now, there's a correlation there because, as I said, sack yardage goes as lost rushing yardage. But still, I think you see, and then some all-time numbers in terms of yards per carry. And like I said, probably the best part of it is that a bunch of the guys who contributed to that offensive line, who were big parts of that offensive line, are back. TJ Clemmings and Matt Rothram are gone, but Adam Bisnawati and Jared Jones-Smith are back. You really just needed a new right guard, and it looks like it could be Alex Buchser, or depending on how the battle plays out, Artie Rao or Alex Officer. And there's more athletic ability than Artie Rao. It's probably, I mean, it's a new system, so I can't see he has more experience in the system, but I think he's going to be a rock-solid guy who will do what he's supposed to do on every play. And that can put pressure on Alex Officer to match that kind of accountability, I guess, for lack of a better word. And it can put pressure on Alex Buchser, too. Two out of those three guys is going to start. And I mean, really, if you want to throw Dorian Johnson in, if you want to say that Officer is kind of a lock up to that ability yet. And part of that is because he played too soon. He played before he was ready as a freshman. He could have used the redshirt year that year. Ultimately, that wasn't really an option. And so he was just kind of playing pickup over, you know, or catch up, excuse me, over the last couple of years. Well, you're junior now. You're in your third year. It's time to take that next step. It's time to become the player that people expect you to be. And if he does, if he takes that step, what's the theme there? What's the common, what links all five of those guys together? They're all going to be back next year with another year of experience. I mean, you basically have three guys with full season of starts under their belt. Bisnawati, Johnson, and Rao. We know the unique situation with Jared Jones-Smith, where he started three games, but he rotated in, and we all kept saying, what the heck are they doing? Why are they rotating offensive linemen? You don't rotate offensive linemen. You pick your five, you go with your five. If somebody wins a job or beats somebody out, and you have to make a change. It might as well be starting experience for him coming into this season. Even though he only has three career starts, you might as well count as having 13 games of experience or 12 games of experience or whatever he played last year. And then fast forward to next year, and Bisnawati, all things, you know, assuming everybody stays healthy and all that, Bisnewadi's going to have 31 starts under his belt. And Dorian Johnson will have 30 starts or 29 starts under his belt. And Alex Officer will have 23 under his belt. You know, Jared Jones-Smith will have 16 starts next year. And all of that means this offense should take off. Because we talk about Boyd, and we talk about Connor, and those guys deserve every bit of talk that we give them. Those guys deserve every bit of pub, and any superlative that's used about Tyler Boyd or James Connor is very much deserved. But if it can come together up front, if those guys up front can play the way I think they're capable of, the way they've done in the past, and stay healthy, we know that's got expected effect or impact on the defense of making it better. Boy, oh boy. You could have, like I say, you could have something really special brewing with this Pitt offense. You saw the signs of it late last season. There's no reason it shouldn't carry over into this year. And then next year, even without Tyler Boyd and even without James Conner. All right, we're going to take a little break. We come back, we will preview Virginia. Take a look at the Cavaliers, Pitt's opponent, next opponent in our opponent-by-opponent season preview for 2015. Talk a little UVA football and the dead man walking.
I explain the what happened and why behind every game and take you where Pirates fans can't go, into the clubhouse and on the road. That's how our Trib team has your team covered. Read our stories every day in Trib Total Media's newspapers and online at pirates.triblive.com.
Now back to Chris Peek on the Panther Lair Show on Trib Live Radio.
Welcome back, Panther Lair Show. Chris Peek, Trib Live Radio here. Continuing our preview of the 2015 season as we go, worked our way through the 2015 schedule where, you know, 2 weeks ago we talked about Iowa, where Kirk Ferentz is probably coaching for his job, where he needs to hit a certain win level and not lose to Iowa State if he wants to remain as the head coach of the Hawkeyes for another season, which I believe will be 18 seasons if he makes it to 2016. And then last week we talked to Jason Stamm from HokieHaven.com, the Virginia Tech Rivals site, about the Hokies. He's done enough to earn the right to go out on his own terms, but, you know, you start to wonder how that situation plays out if he has another year that is less than what Virginia Tech expects out of its football program on an annual basis. And then this week we come to Virginia. And Mike London and the Cavaliers, it's just been miserable. I mean, you're talking about 5 years at Virginia. This will be year number six, and he had 1 8-win season in his second year. And beyond that, it's been 2 wins, 4 wins, 4 wins, and 5 wins to get fired. And Mike London needs to win at a certain level this season, or else he's going to get fired. I think there was an assumption last year that he might get fired. Although, you know, interestingly, we had Brad Franklin from CavsCorner.com. He runs the Rivals.com Virginia site. He joined us last year, maybe prior to the game or during the summer. I think we were doing some previews and he said, you know what? No, he's not going to get fired this year. He's safe. He's got a, you know, good relationships with the administration and all that. Well, I think it was late. Might not be back for the year after that if you don't win at a certain level. And it sure looks like Mike London is at that point right now. He's got to hit a certain target this year. Can the Cavaliers do it? Can they compete in the Coastal? Can they win 8 or 9 games? They've probably got the defensive talent to pull it off. And defensive coordinator John Tenuta has done a good job down there. That's been the strength for Virginia over the last few years is their defense. We've seen that when they played against Pitt. They've done a good job, last year. And you can talk all you want about yards per game or total offense this or rushing or passing. It comes down to points. How much can you score? And they were 85th in the nation last year in scoring offense. In 2013, they were 111th. They averaged less than 20 points per game 2 years ago. In 2012, they were 95th in the nation in scoring and 86th in 2011 in scoring offense. In the last 4 years, they haven't ranked better than 85th in the nation in scoring offense. And a lot of that comes down to they have Nick Johns, a freshman. Oh, Andrew Ford, another kid who's second year player. He transferred out, another quarterback. Nick Johns is a freshman coming in. It's pretty much going to be Johns and Cutler. And Cutler almost left. And if Cutler had left, you'd have Nick Johns. It'd be the only scholarship quarterback for Virginia. It's not like the situation's improving. They've been doomed by bad quarterback play the last however many years under Mike London, and they haven't gotten any better. They haven't recruited to replace it. Cutler was supposed to be that. Really tests Pitt's defense. Kind of like last year. They scored 17 against Pitt's defense. Of course, I talked earlier in the show, and I seem to talk almost every week about that three-game stretch that people forget of Akron, Iowa, and Virginia when Pitt's offense was in the tank and the defense actually played well enough to win. And they played well enough to win against Virginia. They gave up 17 points to Virginia. Cavaliers got another 7 on a pick 6 at the end of the first half. Pitt's defense gave up 17 to Virginia's offense last again, like it's been. Probably. He's done well. And they've continued to recruit well. And they're going to have a pretty strong group in the middle in the defensive tackles. But they lost 3 starting linebackers. 3 really good linebackers. And a stud defensive end who went in the 3rd round in the NFL draft, Eli Harold. That's not good. Because Mike London's going to need all hands on deck with this defense. He's going to need this defense to carry the day. And they lost 4 of their best players. Now they still have Quick True freshman, the safety. And he's back. And that's always big, and that's going to help keep that defense strong. And like I said, the defensive tackles will be really good, so that's going to, you know, give Pitt some troubles. But overall, this defense has to replace some really good linebackers, a stud defensive end, and those players in particular, those linebackers in that DN, gave Pitt trouble in the past. I don't know how they're going to replace them. They're going to replace them with players who are unproven. And that means there's an opportunity there. There's an opportunity for playing against Virginia. Like it did last season. Certainly not, you know, early in the year. Pitt faces Virginia, I think, in the 5th game of the season. So maybe they'll be finding their groove a little bit. Tenuto will have an idea of what he wants to do with them. But, you know, I look at Virginia and I see a coach who has just really had a miserable career as the head coach of the Cavaliers. I look at a team that had its strength was defense, and they lost a bunch of their key players. So now you've got these question marks. I look at an offense that doesn't look like it's going to get any better. Event this game. And put this in the group of games Pitt should win in 2015. You shouldn't lose to Youngstown State and Akron. You know, we talked before about how in the last 12 years, Pitt's had one season where they didn't lose to a non-Power 5 conference team or a non-Power conference team. Well, you need this year to be another one. Because you only play 2 teams outside the Power 5 conferences. You need to win both. You can't have any of those fart games. You can't have any of those hiccups. You can't have any of those win those games and start 3-0. And then you start getting into a little bit tougher. You got to go to Blacksburg. And then you host Virginia. Maybe you lose at Blacksburg. That's a tough place to play. Usually have a pretty good defense. It could give Pitt some trouble. Okay, maybe you come home to host Virginia 3-1. You gotta beat Virginia. You got to. I don't know what's gonna happen when you play Georgia Tech, or when you play Duke, when you play Carolina. But you gotta beat Virginia. You gotta beat Syracuse. Those are 5 games you must win. And then those other 7? If you split them, you go at worst 8-4. And that's if you take the short side of the split of a 3-4 against those other 7 teams. If you somehow can get the ball to bounce your way, right? If you win those 5 games you're supposed to win, that I'm saying here on June 11th that you're supposed to win, if you beat Youngstown State, Akron, Iowa, Virginia, and Syracuse, because they all stink, okay? You should beat those teams. If you beat those 9-3 team, my math isn't the best, but you're a 9-win team. If you win the 5 games you're supposed to win and you just split on the favorable side, you split the other 7. Even if you're on the unfavorable side and you go 8-4, it'll be the first 8-win regular season for Pitt since 2009. The opportunities are there. When you have clunker teams, when you have stinker teams like Virginia, you gotta beat them. This team's defense is gonna be, cause we're at the end of our show. we're all out of time. Thanks to Danny, my new producer tonight, or today, for filling in for Josh Taylor, who's trying to figure out how to get the video stream to work. And But don't call him a moron, though, because he doesn't appreciate that. It's not nice talk for someone who's as nice as Josh. But thanks to Danny for producing the show. Appreciate that, as always. We'll be back again next week, shifting our focus on our position-by-position preview to the defense. We'll start with the DNs next week, and that'll be exciting. And we'll start to look at Georgia's option, or if he can do a little bit better than his predecessor did over the last 2 years. Thanks for tuning in. As always, follow me on Twitter, at PantherLair, P-A-N-T-H-E-R-L-A-I-R. Website panther-lair.com, pittsburgh.rivals.com for all the latest Pitt sports news, football, basketball, and recruiting. We'll see you on the message boards. We'll talk to you next Thursday. This is the Panther Lair Show here on Trib Live Radio.